Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Can I ask in the future that you send the link by email also besides the WhatsApp?
Yes, I will. Of course, you know, you can all just register through Web Yeshiva, and then you don't need to get the link. You can just log in automatically each week.
That's true. Okay. Okay. So I should have thought of that. Okay.
You did send it by email earlier today.
I sent it by... No, if you're registered through Web Yeshiva, you get an automated... That happens automatically.
Okay, Veseder. So, never mind.
Okay. Fine. Anyway, welcome. Welcome back. I think we have most hands on deck. Jeff Sachs from Web Yeshiva here. And Kehilat Mishkan Sipora, which you see on the screen. I apologize. We have to have something of an abbreviated shiur because I have to be in a different Zoom now. So I'm trying to dance at two Zooms at the same time. I'm just muting everyone. You can unmute yourself if you need. Rain. We're really nearing the end of it's a long. I mean, it's many amudim of Agadah. I wonder. What is the longest, David, you will provide the answer for us. When I say that David will provide the answer, it's not to the exclusion of everyone else. You understand. You're all as capable of doing the kind of research that David does. But we all just know that he'll do it and we won't. So David, you know, has those kinds of skills of getting to the knowledge, which is why he's so smart. What is the longest stretch of Agadah in Shas? I do not know. I presume that the information is available. I assume someone knows the answer to that question. But this is a very long stretch of Agadah. But coming up on the next Amud, it's all over, folks. And it's back to the heavy lifting of Halacha. Once we get to Daf Yud, or at least part of the way down Daf Yud. So we'll have a shorter shir tonight, and then we will hopefully... cross that threshold next week. Ula Ikle LaBavel. Ula was one of these figures that would that was, you know, in the liminal space between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. And from time to time we hear of him traveling from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, from Bavel back to Eretz Yisrael. So Ula Ikle LaBavel. Chaza Porchot. You remember last week we saw this idea of which kind of cloud formations are predictable to bring rain. So the Gemara had said that when the clouds are porchot, when the, you know, these big puffy clouds are blowing around, that's a sign of the rain. So he gets to Bavel and he sees the kind of cloud that he knows in Eretz Yisrael is always a sign of rain. Amar Lohu, and he tells the Bavlim, panu mane, clear away all the vessels. You have things out in the yard that'll get wet, that'll get ruined. Dahashta ati mitra, because the rain is about to come. Lasof lo ati mitra, and in the end, what happened? There was no rain. Amar ki hechi de mishachre bavavlai, hachi mishachre mitrayhu. Just as those Babylonians are well known liars, so too their rain is a liar, or their rains are liars. There was this idea, you know, it's surely nothing more than a cruel stereotype, but there was a kind of stereotype among the Bavlim that among the Bnei Eretz Yisrael that Bavlim were not always so reliable. You can't take their word for it. You know, like there are all these types of different national stereotypes that, you know, certainly in America, there was always the kind of national stereotype about of people of Polish extraction and their intelligence. And it was a kind of trope in jokes about Poles. You know, in Poland, they tell those jokes also, but they tell them about people from a particular region in Poland. In other words, in Krakow, they also tell Polish jokes, but they're telling them about somewhere else. You know, like in America, you might tell a joke about hillbillies or something, which is not meant to be to the detriment of the folks in New England or in in the Midwest. So in Eretz Yisrael, they had a stereotype that the Bavlim were well known. They were loose with the facts. So it's just like those Bavlim, you can't trust them. You also can't trust their clouds. The clouds are also unreliable. This is an interesting thing. He probably meant it tongue in cheek. But it's also true. Oh, David, what have you shown us in the chat?
Sorry, not that I got it, but I read part of his book in the it's called The Battle of the Two Talmuds. Uh-huh. And it has to do with the tension between the Amoraim of each location.
Uh-huh.
It's by Leon Chardy and Saul Meisler. So that's okay. I don't remember if it discusses that particular sugya, but it's
Okay, fine. But it's also true that, very often, there are things that we're used to. I remember many summers I spent in a particular camp up in the Catskills. And I remember the first summer I was in camp, I'm standing out on the big lawn in the middle of the campground. And one of the older counselors said, "Oh, it's going to rain soon." And I looked up at the sky, which seemed perfectly clear. And I said, "What are you talking about? There's not a cloud in the sky." And they said, "Yes, but look over there in the opposite direction. Because over there in that," I forget whether it was east or west, "but over there in that direction, between those two hillsides, you see it's all dark. It's all cloudy and gray. And the weather always comes from that direction. When it starts to rain, the rain always comes from that side and moves across the camp in this direction." And v'kachava, it was exactly true. And I came to learn that the weather could be predicted by looking at the the mountainside over the social hall, as they called it then. That was just the weather patterns in that part of the Catskill Mountains moved in that direction. Which doesn't mean that if I'd gone to a different camp in the Poconos, that I would have been able to use the same meteorological divining skills. So Ula comes from Eretz Yisrael, and he says, "I know these kinds of clouds. You know, these clouds, and when we get clouds like this, it's always going to rain." But, you know, the tools for predicting the weather from region to region, let alone from, you know, such disparate geographical areas as Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, you cannot necessarily trust them. Then, now there's another story. Having mentioned Ula's movements back and forth, Ula Iklela Bavel, Chaze Mole Tzina de Tamre. And he sees a big basket, a big barrel of dates, Bezuza, selling real cheap. Right? In other words, the cost of dates in Bavel was so much less than the cost of dates in Eretz Yisrael. He went into the shuk and he saw these were really cheap. The dates were selling for cheap. For one zuz, he was able to get a whole basket of dates. So Omar, Mlatsana Duvshana Bezuza, a whole basket of honey dates, you know, the dates from which you press to get the silan, the date honey. You can buy a whole barrel of dates for just one zuz. Uvavlai lo aske baraisa. And these Babylonians, they're not spending their whole day learning Torah, meaning the low cost of produce was an indicator of the strength of the economy. That if people are able to support themselves with such little money, you know, this is like part of like how they calculate the health of an economy. How much of any household's income has to be spent on food? How much of any household income has to be spent on housing, on heating costs, on food, on other things? So if food is so cheap here, if it's so affordable, right? So they don't have to work so hard, and they must have a tremendous amount of leisure time. And if that's the case, how could it be that these Babylonians aren't? They're not all spending all day long learning Torah since they don't have to work so hard. That's Rachmanis. Like, really, we all should want to learn all day, learn Torah all day long. But Rachmanis, we have to work, okay? So you work because you have to live, you have to survive, you have to support yourself, you have to support your family. But here in Bavel, you know, you don't have to work that hard in order to make a living. So they should all be learning, and they don't do it. So he's criticizing them. Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly true, because the cost of, you can't tell everything about an economy based upon the cost of dates. And it might actually say more just about the date crop at that moment than it does about the general GDP of a country. But last summer, we vacationed right here at home during Corona. The summer before, I led a tour. We were in Lithuania with the Agnon House. And in Lithuania, you go into the shuk and to the marketplaces all over the place, and they have blueberries that are as big as your thumb. And you can buy a gallon of blueberries for about 15 shekel. I mean, you know, it's crazy. Like here you get like a tiny half pint of blueberries and it costs 30 shekel. And here you could get like as many blueberries as you. So we were eating all day long. We were just eating these blueberries, which were delicious. So you say, oh, so I could say the same thing. In fact, the economy of Lithuania is not exactly, you know, would not allow you to sit and dedicate yourself to learning Torah all day. But this is what Ula says about the cost of dates. So what did he do? He did what we did. We ate so many blueberries. Our complexion was turning purple. We ate so many blueberries that summer. So what did he do? He ate a lot of dates. But you know what happens if you eat too many dates? Balila Tsaru. At night, oh boy, he had an upset tummy. Rashi said he had shilshul. If you eat too many dates, you're gonna, you know, it's gonna have an effect on your system. Omar melot sanas the sakina bezuzah. I didn't buy a basket of dates for a penny. I bought a basket of knives, a basket of razor blades that are now ripping up my kishkas. Right? Ubav layasku baraisa? So in other words, the Babylonians, they must be spending all their time going to the bathroom. They must be having shilshul all the time because they're eating these dates. And the fact that they can learn any Torah at all is to their credit. So he kind of does shuva about his critique of the Babylonians. Tanya, Rabbi Elazar Omer, kol ha'olam kulo. Now here's the main machlokus of the evening. Where does rain come from? Right, you remember when you were in school? My kid in fourth grade recently, you know, had this worksheet. You know, the water cycle, right? It hasn't changed at all since I was in fourth grade, right? I don't mean the science hasn't changed. I mean the worksheet hasn't changed. So where does the water come from? It turns out that it's a machlokas tenoyim. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, kol ha'olam kulo mimei okeanos ushote. The whole world, all the water that we drink, comes from the ocean. Now, obviously, he understood that the water does not come from the ocean. The water doesn't come directly from the ocean, but it comes indirectly from the ocean. Shneemar, how does he know this? Well, he knows this because he probably had that same worksheet that my daughter had and that I had and that you had. Meaning he may have understood something about the water cycle, how evaporation works, how clouds work, how precipitation works, etc. But he looked not into the science book, he looked into the Torah to find a support for this idea. So how does he know that the water all originates in the ocean? The pasuk from the second parak of Bereshit, that the mist rises up from the earth and waters the earth. My father-in-law, Zichron Lavracha, used to, they had like this patch of grass in front of the house. Like in the back of the house, they had a backyard that had sprinklers and whatever it was. But in the front of the house, there was just this kind of little patch that had to be watered by hand. So every day, my father-in-law would come home from work. He'd have his briefcase in one hand, and he'd still be in his suit. But before he went into the house, he went over to that little patch, and he stood there and watered it for 4 minutes before he would go inside and forget. His name was Ed. So I said, that's it. V'Ed. V'ed yalem min ha'aretz v'hishka et kol p'nei adama. So Rabbi Eliezer says, the water that we drink comes from the ocean, because why? The Edim, the mist rises up, meaning there's evaporation. Water on earth evaporates. It goes up to the clouds. It saturates the clouds. And then the clouds rain down water. And that water is the water in the rivers. And that water is the water in the reservoirs. And that water is the water in the wells. And that's where we get our water from. And it's described in the Pasuk of this process of the evaporation going up. And then coming back down. So Omar la Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Yehoshua did not agree that this was the case. And he said, V'halo me'me okianis meluchim hein. But the water from the ocean is salty, and the rain is not salty. So obviously the rain does not come from the ocean. Omar lo, mimatkin ba'avin. It gets sweetened in the cloud. The water from the ocean evaporates, goes up to the clouds. In the cloud, they add sugar, or whatever they do. They take out the salt. There's a desalinization process that goes on. And when it falls back down, it's not salty anymore. Rashi says that you can't... It's obviously... Wait, where's that Rashi? Meluchin hein. Here, ve'ein tfua gdela mehen. Right. In other words, if the Rashi had this idea that you can't grow crops with salt water, you can't water your crops with salt water. So if that were the case, we would have nothing to eat, because if the rain came down salty, it would water all the crops. It would ruin all the crops. So Rabbi Yehoshua says, so therefore, where does the rain come? What's his opinion? Rabbi Eliezer says, the rain comes from below. The water evaporates from below and comes back down as rain. And if it's salty water going up, it's sweet water coming down. It's fresh water coming down. So
they didn't have to be, like, you know, modern scientists to be able to... I mean, if they're aware of evaporation, I'm sure they could have taken, like, a pan of salt water and realized that the salt was still left after it evaporated. That would be, like, you know, really basic, you know, observation to see that there was salt left over.
Maybe he did. I mean, maybe he did.
What happens to all the salt in the clouds? Where does that go to?
No, it doesn't. The salt remains behind when it gets evaporated.
What he's saying is that it goes up salty and it comes down sweet. That doesn't...
So you wonder what Rabbi Eliezer would say, what happens to the salt? I don't know. Maybe it falls back to the ocean. I don't know, but he didn't deal. Because maybe either he knew, you know, the technicalities of how it worked. And again, it was tongue-in-cheek when he says the clouds sweeten it. Right? The clouds purify it. Or maybe he really thought that's what happens. You know, like, it undergoes some kind of process. It undergoes some kind of transformation and comes back unsalty. Maybe the salt stays up in the clouds and falls back to earth elsewhere. I mean, you have to explain, if that's the case, how come the ocean hasn't turned less salty over time? Right? And as the ocean is as salty as it always was. But if what happens is that the salt water goes up, right, the evaporation is removing salt and only putting fresh water back in, because the oceans are also replenished from the rain that comes down and from the river, the freshwater river is flowing into them, and etc. So then, you know, over time, the oceans would grow less salty, but that's not the case. So he would have to explain, you know, like, why the oceans remain fresh. But anyway, he didn't feel the need to do that. So it doesn't matter whether he's speaking scientifically or metaphorically, but he understands that the source of the rain is from down here. It goes up and it comes back down. So Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yehoshua disagrees with that. Rabbi Yehoshua says, Rabbi Yehoshua omer kol ha'olam kulo mimayim ha'elyonim hu shote. No, we are all drinking water, not water that originated down here on earth, but water from the upper reservoirs, the mayim elyonim, Ella ma'anu mikayem ve'ed ya'ale min ha'aretz. So then, what does he do with Rabbi Eliezer's pasuk that the mists rise, which Rabbi Eliezer identified as the evaporation process? So what Rabbi Yoshua says, there's this kind of endless supply of water up in the heavens. You know the Agadah, you know the Midrash about Shamayim, that it's Eish and Mayim, that there's water up there somehow, and the firmament, the Rakia, is keeping it separate. But yet, nevertheless, it finds its way down here in the process of rain. So then what does he do about the Pasuk in Breshit, about the evaporation going up, if all the water is there to begin with? Milamed sha'ananim mitgabrim v'olim l'rakia. Upotchim pihen kenod u'mekablim me matar shne'emar yazoku matar le'edo. So he says, no, that it's not the evaporation. It's the clouds. As the clouds go up, it's the clouds are the ed. The cloud is the mist that goes up, and the cloud is like a sponge that like absorbs the water that's held up above the rakia, and it's the conduit through which the water can then come down back to earth. Uminu kavot hein kichavra. And the clouds have holes in them, like a colander. But as the clouds get saturated from the upper waters, and then the rain passes through the holes in the clouds, uboot umachashrot mayim al gabe karka, and the water comes down and it drenches the earth. Shneemar chashrat mayim av shchakim, right? The pouring of the water from the thick, heavy clouds in the Shamayim, in the skies. Ve'ein bein tipa l'tipa, ela kimlo nima. And between each drop, there's only a hair's breadth. But each drop falls individually. The truth is, l'lam decha, shegadol yom hagshamim ki yom shenivru bo Shamayim va'aretz. Right, which goes to show you this idea that the Gemara has been exploring, that rain, the arrival of the rain, is as great as the creation of heaven and earth, because the rain is this thing that exists in the space between heaven and earth. Right, it passes through the heaven, it passes through the heaven and the earth. Now the truth is, I never thought of this before. Until looking over this Gemara again today. And then, of course, you Google it and you find out that everybody's been talking about it, you know, since the beginning of time. Why is it that rain falls in drops and not in a stream? Because when you turn on the shower head, the water comes out in a fixed stream. It doesn't come out as individual drops. If you take a cup of water and you spill it out, it doesn't come out. It comes out as one, what in halacha is called a kiluach, right? One stream. How come rain doesn't come down like that, right? Why does it come down in individual drops? Now, sometimes if it's a lot of rain, the drops will bump into each other on the way down and form larger drops. But why? Like, have you ever considered that? So it has to do with the process by which the water evaporates. Lehalocha, Rabbi Eliezer is correct. Rabbi Eliezer's conception is of course much closer to what we know today about science, and Rabbi Yoshua's, of course, is completely not. But it has to do with the way the evaporation works and the way the water droplets form, either as water or as ice, around dust particles in the cloud, which keeps them individuated as individual droplets, and that's how it falls as raindrops instead of as a heavy, even in the heaviest rain, right? Which, I mean, if you're stuck in it, it might look like you're like in the middle of a flood, you're in the middle of the shower, but in fact, it's even in the heaviest rain, the rain always falls as drops. So this idea that the rain is as that the rain is as powerful, is as great. The arrival of the rain is as powerful and as great as Yom Shenivro Shemayim Baretz, the creation of the heaven and earth. Shneemar Oseg Dolot Ein Cheker. Another pasuk in Iov. There's a lot of pesukim in Iov that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does things that are ein cheker, right? They cannot be examined, right? They cannot be fully fathomed. Uchtiv hanotein matar al pnei aretz. He gives, in other words, the Iov again says, what's one of the things she'ein cheker? What's one of the things that you can't fully fathom? How he brings water and rain onto the earth. Uchtiv lahalan halo yadata imlo shamata elokei olam Hashem ein cheker l'tfunato. So what does it mean ein cheker? Right, that there are things we can't fathom about the way Hashem runs the world. That just like he created the world ein cheker. And he brings rain upon the earth, Ein Cheker, right? These two things are equated. These are wondrous things. Now, none of us were around at the moment that the heavens and earth were created, but we've all seen rain. As a matter of fact, we've grown rather inured to it. We don't get excited to see rain. I mean, even here in Israel, where we get worried about rain, we get anxious about rain, we daven for rain, we think about it, we check the weather report, we do all of those other things, because it's not just a matter of whether I need to bring my umbrella when I leave the house today, but it has to do with this idea that we have to have rain. We don't have a Nile after all, and you know, it's part of the Zionist ethos to be worried about the rain. But nevertheless, when in fact it does rain, even when it pours, we don't appreciate it as something miraculous. But the Gemara is saying it really is. It really is miraculous. It's an extension of the creation of... It's an extension of the creation of heaven and earth. It's the kind of thing, Ein Cheker L'Tfunato, right? We can't really fathom how it works. Uchtiv Makin Harim Bekocho, that Mechin Harim Bekocho, he sets the mountains with his strength. That's a perek Samechei in Tehillim has to do with God's might and God's power in running the universe, and it discusses, among other things, the bringing of rain. But you have to kind of like learn that perek to understand why that pasuk is relevant. So, I mean, maybe that's the point. Like, maybe even the Gemara was aware. Maybe whoever was Masada the Gemara here was aware that Rabbi Yehoshua's position was like didn't fit with our understanding of how the world works. Right? Today, like, you know, somebody would seriously tell you Rabbi Yehoshua's position about where rain comes from. You know, like, you'd laugh at them. The clouds are like sieves that the water passes through because the clouds have little holes in them. And it's the place where the upper region and the lower region can interact, where the rain can permeate down to the heaven, down to the earth, etc. Right? So like we think this person is a little cuckoo and certainly not scientifically informed. But maybe that's what the Amorayim were saying. They were saying that like the whole thing, Ein Cheker. You think you know how God... And that's the point of Iov. All these psukim about the natural world in Iov, the point is that Hashem is saying, you think you understand things? You don't understand things. You think you know how I run the world? You don't really know how I run the world. So even with all of our scientific knowledge, which is, you know, really quite impressive, you know, there's still things we don't understand. So don't laugh at poor Rabbi Yehoshua that he seemed to have gotten it wrong, that he had a different worksheet than I had and my daughter had and you had, right? Because even if you know how it works, you don't know how it works. Because at the end of the day, it works because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world. And there are things about it which are ein cheker, they're beyond our knowledge. So, keman azla hadichtiv, so in the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, according to which one of them is the pasuk which states Mashke Harim Ma'aliyotav. In other words, there's a pasuk in Tehillim that says Hashem brings rain, he brings water on the mountains from the Ma'aliyotav, from the upper reservoirs. Well, doesn't that sound like Rabbi Yehoshua, who said the water comes from this upper reservoir? V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ma'aliyotav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kiman k'Rabbi Yehoshua? Rabbi Eliezer. So what would Rabbi Eliezer do with that pasuk about the Ma'aliyotav, about the upper reservoirs? Right? Kevan desalke lahatam mashkem aliyotav krilahu. So Rabbi Eliezer has no problem. Rabbi Eliezer also agrees the rain comes from above. The question isn't that the rain falls from top to bottom, right? The question is, where does the water originate? In other words, the water, Rabbi Eliezer says, the water originates down here on earth, evaporates, goes up to the clouds, and then falls back down. Once it's up on the clouds, it's Ma'aliyotav, it's the upper reservoir, it's there in potential waiting to fall down. De'i lo te'mahachi. So if you don't say like that, if you don't explain it that way, avak v'afar min hashamayim. There's a posuk that says that in the klalot, when describing how Hashem will punish us, that dust and dirt fall from the sky, right? Meaning like there'll be a like we have a what do you call that? Like a dust storm or a sandstorm or something like that. You know, that happens sometimes. That happens where we'll get these, what's the word for that? Where it rains mud here. No, what's the word for the?
No, sandstorm.
So it is obviously there's no dust and dirt up in heaven to fall back down. But when we say that it's raining dirt, it's raining dust, it means that like the wind lifted it up, it somehow got up into the atmosphere, and then it falls back down. But the origin of it, the origin of the sand, when that happens here, the sand is coming out of Midbar Yehuda.
Do you think there could be any sort of like kind of hidden polemic here going on between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua about their understanding of, like, you know, if you read the opening, you know, parak of Breishit, and, you know, just like according to the actual plain meaning, it discusses these, you know, rakia and lavdil ben rakia, and there's waters above, and then you have those same waters are the ones that eventually cause the mabul. So there's like this conception in Breishit of there being water above and not water below. And I'm wondering if, you know, certainly according to Rabbi Yeshua, he fits very well that approach of like, well, there's just waters above. And was Rabbi Eliezer sort of tapping into something that later became more accepted scientific thought, maybe even in his day, that we don't view that as a literal understanding of where the waters are?
Well, hold on, because that's really what the Gemara is getting towards. But no, there's no doubt that Rabbi Yeshua, even though his position seems, incorrect to us today, yesh lo amal lismoch, right? This was the midrashic view of the upper waters. Right? So he's not completely crazy, and he's not without precedent. So certainly, I think that's certainly the case. So, so hachinami the salke lahata ma'aliyotav karile, right? So Rabbi Eliezer says, hachinami, I also agree that the water falls from above. So when you say that it's falling me'aliyotav, I mean, it's a pasuk after all, mashke ma'aliyotav, right? Is a pasuk in Tehillim, right? Rabbi Eliezer can't dismiss it. But he says it's not giving you a scientific description. It's a figure of speech. When we say that the water comes from above, that doesn't mean it originates above. It means it falls back down to earth from up there. Just like when we say that, it's raining sand and mud min hashamayim, right? It doesn't mean that it originates from there. It means it got blown up there and it fell back down. So keman azlahad omar Rav Chanina. So whose opinion accords with what Rabbi Chanina says in the pasuk in Tehillim? Kones Kaned Me Hayam, that Hashem gathers together the waters of the ocean, Noten Ba'otsrotav Tehomot, and puts the deep waters into his storeroom. In other words, Rabbi Chanina says that where is the water held in reservoir? In the Tehomot, in the deep, in the depths. You remember the midrash about the Mabul of Noach, right? So it rained, but it wasn't just that the rain came. It's that there's a reservoir of underground water that the cork was pulled out and the oceans rose while the rain was coming down. That there's a reservoir above and there's a reservoir below, and they met in the middle to cover the whole earth. So Rabbi Chanina says, where's the main reservoir of water? It's below. So whose opinion does that sound like? That sounds like Rabbi Eliezer. Mi garam le'otsrot shitmalu bar. So who fills up the silos, the storerooms with grain? Tehomot. The lower depths, the water that's below. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Hoshua, Hahu Bivriato Shel Olam. That's the top of the next daf. So Rabbi Hoshua says, no. So what does he say when points out that there's water that's stored at the bottom underneath? So he says, no. That was the water that was there for Maaseh Bereshit. Rabbi Yoshua says, I agree. Initially, all the water in the oceans were here to begin with. And they emanated from below. But the ongoing rain, that comes from the store that's above. That comes from the store that's above. The Gemara does not exactly resolve this matter because this is not actually a halachic point. But it's an interesting insight to how, I mean, it's like an insight to like how people understood the scientific mechanisms that run the world. It's an interesting insight to how they then try to read it back into the sources and how they like looked around and observed nature to try to see how the two fit together. I think the point of the discussion from the Pasuk in Iyov about Ein Cheker is the most important point, that we should be careful in criticizing. That's the beauty of the scientific method. You know, there's a lot of conversation now about the scientific method and finding cures for diseases and, you know, solving pandemics and other things like that. You know, at the end of the day, Judaism is a very rationalistic religion. Even though there are, throughout our long history as a faith, there are different trends that come and go. But Besach HaKol, we're people who believe in science. And the scientific method is the thing which has proven itself best to get to truth. Not because science always gets it right. On the contrary, the one thing science has shown is that in future generations, they will look back and think that we understood very little. And we today should not have the arrogance to think that we understand it all. We will be viewed by people in future millennia as being about as ignorant about things as people 200 and 500 years ago were. The point of the scientific method is that it's always correcting itself. Science gets things wrong, but it's always moving towards getting it more right. And, you know, when we look back at, you know, Rabbi Yehoshua, who could have said this, we needn't be disparaging. You know, sometimes there's that attitude to say that, you know, Chazal didn't understand, they didn't get it, rabbis don't always know, etc., etc. The point is that they were making the best faith effort to try to get at truth. And the attempt to get at truth sometimes means you get it wrong. but we're constantly correcting ourselves. There's an interesting paper that came into tradition about the Rambam and the Rambam and rationalism and science and other things, and the person was saying that like we don't always go by the Rambam, we don't always go by the Rambam in matters of pure halacha, and certainly not in scientific matters. So in the Rambam, in the Mishneh Torah, in his Encyclopedia of Halacha, brings medical advice. The most Maimonidean the essay says something like the most Maimonidean thing that you can do is not listen to the Rambam's medical advice, right? Because even though he kind of paskins what you should eat and how you should treat this disease and what you should do, but the whole idea of the Maimonidean ethic is you go according to the best available knowledge. So even though he gave a prescription for different things in the Mishneh Torah and in his other medical writings, which are not, considered halachic sources, but in the Mishneh Torah itself, he gives medical directives. But the thing you can do that's most loyal to his halachic position would be today to ignore almost all of it. I think he says you should drink water. So, like, water is good. But even that, he says you shouldn't always drink water. But we think drinking water, as long as it's clean, is like the best medical advice you can get. So drink a lot of water and get your vaccine. That's the point of this. Anyway, I apologize. I have to cut it short to Zoom elsewhere. And we'll continue next week, where hopefully we will finish this long Agadah and get back to, you see, on Daf Yud, the Mishnah midway through Yud already asks, "Begibel b'marcheshvan sholin dat k'shamim." When do we start saying "V'tein talu matar livracha"? More halachic matters are coming up. Be well, take the vaccine if you can get it, and stay indoors.